This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
The in-person goal celly. You gotta like it. Why, ladies and gentlemen, you might ask, well, this is ordinarily the time where I would say, joining us on the phone, a young lady who covers the South Carolina Athletic Department for the Greenville News, she is Lulu Kesson. I'm going to say like 87% of that because for the first time, I'm going to say joining us live in the studio is a young lady who covers the the South Carolina Athletic Department for the Greenville News. Joining us here in studio, Lulu Kesson in town covering the SEC Women's Tournament down at the Bon Secours Wellness Arena. Welcome into our humble abode. How are you?
Good morning. I'm so happy to be here in person. How are you guys? Thanks for having me.
We're fantastic. Thank you for coming by. I assume that the Greenville News did the honor of like putting you up in a very comfortable... I'm a big hotel guy. I sleep better in a hotel than in my own bed, make it like 8 degrees and just crash. So the fact that you were willing to get up and come outside this early to come hang out, we appreciate it.
Of course. This is truly so fun, so thank you.
Heck yeah. Love to hear that. Here's what I'd like to do, Lulu Kesson, since you have been kind enough to become a recurring character on this little bleep show that we call the Rob Brown Show. I would like to take the opportunity to allow you to kind of introduce yourself a little bit more to our audience. You've been with us for, I don't know, like 7 months now at this point, talking football and basketball, and very soon transitioning to maybe my favorite sport of all, a little college baseball. We'll get to that in a minute, but tell us a little bit about the background, where you came from, how you ended up here, and how you ended up covering the Gamecocks for the Greenville News.
Yeah, so I'm from Massachusetts originally. I'm sure some South Carolina drivers are confused when I'm on the highway next to them with a bunch of Massachusetts plates and stickers on my car.
Our last coworker didn't change his Texas plates for like 4 years.
Okay,
you're good.
Okay, cool.
Probably still has it.
Probably still has them, and yeah.
Okay, perfect. I joined the South Carolina women's basketball beat. I cover football and baseball as well, as you said, but I got here in between the Final Four and the National Championship last year. So not a bad time to start. Pretty much my first in-person go-around after just meeting Shane Beamer at a spring practice was the National Championship Parade in Columbia. So I'm coming up on my one-year anniversary here. I've always wanted to cover women's college basketball at a pretty high level. I'm lucky that I'm able to do that now.
Yeah, you nailed that one.
Yeah. I love it here. I love my job. I'm grateful for this opportunity, and it brings me things like being on the radio every week. So thanks for having me.
Of course. We're glad you are. So you came down from Massachusetts. Celtics fan?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Figured. Jason Tatum's face of the league. I don't care what anybody says.
I appreciate that. I get in a fight with, we have a reporter on the beat who's from Philly, and he told me Jason Tatum has no aura, which I was like, that is the most ludicrous thing I've ever heard. So I'm glad you're also a Tatum appreciator.
Lonzo, what's aura mean?
Well, it depends on what your definition of aura. For an old person like me, it's like I don't know. It's how much you show up when you enter a room. That's your aura.
Yeah.
I think
don't act surprised.
You're still hip to the cool
don't
kids.
Don't act surprised.
I am interested in that basketball team. I think the Lakers are dominant out of the West. I still think the Boston Celtics are the best team in the league, and yeah. I don't think it's close anymore. To be honest with you. Lulu Kessin joining us here in studio on the Rob Brown Show in the Fan Off Seat. So you get to South Carolina right in time to jump into the very end, the heated part of the Women's National Championship Tournament last year. I do have to ask, what was your first experience and what are the memories of your first experience with Dawn Staley? Because I've had her on the show in the past. She is a riot to talk to. What was your first experience like and what has it been like maintaining that relationship with Dawn Staley since you got here?
Well, luckily, I'll shout out the SID, like the sports information director for South Carolina, who got me a one-on-one interview with Dawn pretty early into our relationship. So it was kind of funny because I hadn't met her and I didn't at this point either. But basically, I was told one random afternoon, early April, that Dawn was going to call me for a story on Camila Cardoso, who was about to get drafted. And it was just very funny to hear her very like chill, just having gone on kind of this tear of interviews, and she was on the Today Show, I think, at that point, and obviously very animated on ESPN, as she should have been. She just went undefeated. So it was very fun to kind of get her like, oh, she's just like soft voice, talking slow, just chatting. And then we eventually kind of met in person in May when the Las Vegas Aces came for the preseason
game. Was super dope, by the way.
That was incredible. To sit at a table with Becky Hammon, Asia Wilson, and Dawn Staley, I was like, I'm a month into this job. Like, this is absolutely insane. So that was awesome. And then obviously once practices ramped up in October, Dawn and I got, you know, now she knows my name.
Love that. Love that. This team she put together last year had a probably 4, 5, maybe 6 WNBAers on it long term. And then obviously Asia Wilson right now, I would argue face of the WNBA. Camila Cardoso's up there doing big things. Like, there's a number of Gamecocks there already. There's a number more still in Columbia on the way. I think not only are you getting to cover arguably the most contemporary, dynamic, and dominant team in women's college basketball, you're also covering like at least one WNBA All-Star team down the line. I have been an advocate and proponent of women's sports in this role for a very long time. You having the opportunity to cover and spread what Dawn and Columbia is doing there. How big is that, do you think, in that role for the growth of women's sports, A, but also just basketball as a whole?
It's huge. And first of all, I'll give you a shout out for doing that. I appreciate your role in talking about women's sports and, again, for having me on so I'm able to. I think especially now a lot of people are using kind of the phrase like grow the game. And I think that's very important to acknowledge that women's basketball is obviously getting the media attention now that it's always deserved. There's very talented coaches and players throughout the league. But I do think South Carolina can sometimes be almost a victim of like fatigue in the sense that fans are like, oh, we want someone else. They've been so good for so long.
Lonzo's a Chiefs fan.
Okay.
He gets it.
Yeah. I.e. like the SEC voting this year and awards and things like that. I'm not here to say that Vic Schaefer didn't necessarily deserve SEC Coach of the Year, but those are kind of when the conversations happen when, okay, South Carolina, yeah, they lost 3 games compared to none last year, but that doesn't mean they took a huge drop off. So I do think it's important that when you're highlighting the really great teams and kind of the powerhouse programs like South Carolina, UConn, Tennessee, that you don't have to make them smaller to make other teams in the women's basketball world as a whole bigger.
That's interesting because I've had the perspective for a long time that I would absolutely say, and I think in the context of being honest about where everything is, like the gap between Texas, LSU, Tennessee, South Carolina, and even the next group of like ranked 11 through 20 teams, that gap is wide. And I think you kind of have to acknowledge that. But I've also said that as the teams at the top get better, because it used to be, for instance, just UConn. It was Gino Auriemma. It was Diana Taurasi when I was in high school. It's Paige now. But it was UConn was winning 100 in a row. And even as somebody who wanted to see the game grow, it was kind of difficult to invest because it felt like an inevitability. But eventually, Dawn gets to South Carolina, that team's on its way up. Kim Mulkey gets to LSU, that team's on its way up. We're starting to see talent spread out because at the end of the day, there's only so many people that can go play in Columbia, can go play in Baton Rouge, can go play in Texas, can go play in Connecticut. And I think that when you say grow the game, to me, that's what it's talking about. It's, yeah, South Carolina is the dominant team, but that doesn't mean that eventually that roster fills up. Now we have more good players because we've gotten younger girls interested in the game, learning the game earlier. And now all of a sudden, maybe there's a 4-star, maybe a top 3-star out there that South Carolina didn't have room for, but Clemson does, but Georgia does. And now all of a sudden they start building that talent. And I think that is the benefit. And for the record, tip of the cap to Gino Auriemma for doing what he did to start this whole thing. Pat Summitt, another hero of mine out at Tennessee, for doing that. But I think we're starting to see the investment in women's basketball pay off at the college level. And now that you're getting this new generation of Caitlin Clarks and Cameron Brinks and Asia Wilson's moving up to the WNBA, all of a sudden they're filling out NBA arenas too.
Right, totally. And I think Juju Watkins, you know, starting what she's doing at USC or the other USC, I should say.
Yeah. Be real careful.
I'm going to be really careful there. Obviously, Cheryl Miller and, you know, the Trojans were phenomenal at one point in time, but there was kind of that large gap where talent wasn't necessarily staying there. And now with what Lindsey Gottlieb's doing and Juju and like exactly what you're saying, just more teams are getting the number one, number three, number four, even through 10 recruits in each high school class. And it isn't just so stacked, but obviously growing up in Massachusetts, you know, UConn was kind of all that I heard about when I was super young.
I was growing up in Florida. UConn's all I heard about too. It was Gino and it was Pat. And then it was just a distant gap to everybody else. That gap, even though it's still there, the gap used to be from 1 and 2 to 3. Now I think it's more like from 10, 11 to 12. And with the, again, increase in talent, like the part of the reason why, and I've had a lot of people over the years that have gone, why are you talking about this? Why? Well, the answer is because there's a parent in a car right now driving around with a little girl who maybe loves basketball. And what I'm not going to let happen is people to get to, oh, women's basketball is boring. We don't care. Yeah, we do care. And we want it to be great. And it is great not when we have great college players, but when we have those young girls that look and they have their kid. And this is the other part to me about, you know, the Caitlin Clark effect, they call it. But again, like, I think this last year with Angel Reese, with Cam Brink, with Camilla Cardoso, like this was the most visible WNBA draft class of all time, to the point that the WNBA has spinoff leagues now that are helping these players develop in the offseason. That visibility, I think, is tangible for young girls to go, not only can I play basketball, but I can play basketball in a way that is a national television product at this point if I'm good enough at it. And when this next crop of young girls who watched Caitlin Clark come through Iowa and go to the Dub, Cameron Brink come through Cal and go to the Club, etc., when they start transitioning into middle and high school basketball, going to be a lot more 4 and 5 star players to go around.
Totally. And especially when UConn was so dominant, that was what pretty much media coverage was only willing to cover. Yep. It wasn't about anything else. So you have these, you know, 7th graders who are like, oh, I could never play for a team that hasn't lost in 3 years. And now it's, you know, there's so much dominance, but it's also the media is acknowledging everybody in every part of women's basketball, not just one team.
Yeah, I think if there was 10 years ago, if there was a Paige Beckers, that team's undefeated. Like just having Paige Beckers, that team's undefeated. UConn ain't even close to undefeated. They're not even, I think they're like the 7th longest odds to win the Natty this year with Gino Auriemma and Paige Beckers, who is going to be the number one overall pick in the Dub next year. And all of a sudden that team is like, it's a good team, but it ain't dominant. It used to be a player like that, like a Diana Taurasi in 2001-2 when I was in high school, that won you all the games. Now you got to have 3 of those to be competitive at the top level. There's a bunch of teams that have 1 of those girls, 2 of those girls, and they're kind of like transitioning up. But I just think, as somebody who is an advocate and proponent of women's sports, like, I think we're in an incredible transitional time that 5, 6, 7 years from now, we're going to look back at this conversation and go, damn, we were pointed in the right direction.
For sure. And I hope that with all that, more national outlets hire women's basketball reporters and create more jobs that are solely dedicated to women's college sports and the WNBA, for sure.
Love it. Lulu Kessin from the Greenville News. She joins us every Thursday at 8 o'clock to talk South Carolina Gamecock athletics. Joining us today in studio because she's in the GVL covering the SEC Women's Tournament down to the Bonscore Wellness Arena. How do you like Greenville, by the way?
I love it. It's beautiful.
Right?
It's really, really beautiful.
I got here 5 years ago. Yeah, I just live here now. It's home now. It's the best.
I love that.
We are going to do this. I'll tell you what. Let's run to a break just a couple of minutes early because Lulu's going to hang out with us for one more segment. When we come back, let's talk about the SEC Women's Tournament. You were there yesterday, got to cover the games. You're going to be there throughout the end of the week. Of course, South Carolina tips their first round game after winning the number one seed via coin flip at noon tomorrow. So we'll set up everything else that's happened, who the potential opponents for the Gamecocks might be at noon tomorrow, and then what a path to a conference championship and potentially another natty looks like for Dawn and the girls. We do that when we come back. Lulu Kessin for the Greenville News in studio with me, Rob Brown, with the great one, Lonzo, and with you, it's the Fan Upstate.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
Survivor 48 is here. And after every episode, dig deep into the show with On Fire, the official Survivor podcast. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
Good vibes up in here today. I like it. Good vibes on the show. Rob Brown, the great Lonzo, with you. The Rob Brown Show is on your radio.
Boss, it's the fan boss is out of town, so he can't.
That's
can't
fair.
Play in this, probably.
There's no rules. There's some rules. Lula Kessin of the Greenville News covers the South Carolina Gamecocks for that publication. Joining us here in studio, hanging out for one more segment. I do have to say, when I opened the door to meet Lulu in the parking lot and I said, good morning, she said, you sound just like you do on the radio. And I don't know if that's good or bad.
Definitely not bad.
I'll take it.
Was it as loud as you thought it would be? I mean, that's usually the thing.
His good morning was normal volume for sure. But now that I hear his, you know, his in-studio voice, it's right back to a phone call.
I apologize for not giving you headphones.
Yep, that's because, what I was about to say.
Yeah, I should have done that, but
in this studio,
the extra headphones I have are a little bit cracked, and I didn't want
it. It could be headphones or hearing protection. It's the same thing.
It is the same thing. Yeah. It's if you have those big things like from the airport, I would love some of those headphones. Those would be awesome.
It's nothing to apologize for, because if it was the opposite, it'd literally be like an SNL skit. So I appreciate that I can hear you and that you're passionate. It's nothing to be ashamed of.
I won't bring up which one, but that is one of the greatest SNL skits of all time.
Oh, 100%.
Alec Baldwin kills in that sketch. All right, we're talking with Lulu Kessin. She is in town covering the SEC Women's Basketball Championship Tournament. And we are going to talk about South Carolina. Their first game is tomorrow at noon. They catch the winner of Tennessee, the 9 seed, and Vanderbilt, the 8 seed. That game tips off at 11 o'clock this morning. The winner of that game gets the Gamecocks the next day. And Lulu Kessin, if you would have told me 12 hours ago that was the case, I'd have been like, all right, I mean, you get the winner of the 8-9 seed, like, as the 1 seed, good thing you won that coin toss, what a good spot. And then I go look at the fact that Tennessee put up 77 and held A&M, granted, A&M the 16 seed in a 16 tournament, still a 40-point round one victory for the Volunteers. So I'll ask you to start this. Was that more the Volunteers up in the game, or Texas A&M just not on that level yet?
Well, Tennessee lost really badly to Georgia and Kentucky. It's 2 games to end the season. So I do think it was okay. Tennessee realized we have to wake up. I think Kim Caldwell said they had to have like some type of like come to Jesus moment. I think Tennessee was almost in need of exactly what it got, like a commanding victory. That said, I do think that the game today will be harder just because I think Texas A&M, I don't want to say they were closing the doors on their season, but it just obviously wasn't their year. And so competition-wise, it was a perfect match. But, I mean, Tennessee lost to Georgia, who some could argue is kind of in the same talent pool as Texas A&M is. They obviously lost to them in their final regular season game, which which wasn't great. So I do think that Tennessee really stepped on the gas and refused to let up at any point. And do I think that they'll do that to Vanderbilt? I don't. But it was definitely Tennessee in dire need of a huge win.
This Vanderbilt team that is up against Tennessee is kind of interesting because it is a team that is sitting at 21-9 this year. It's also a team that's had a handful of games. They put up a lot of points. Like, this one could end up being a track meet. I'll put it this way. As a sports gambler, the over is a layup in this one, I feel like.
Yeah, I know nothing about gambling, so don't take my word for it, but these are two teams that can score. Obviously, Michaela Blakes has dropped 50 points in two different games, so it's definitely going to be high-level offense on both ends.
This team has put up a hundy in two of their last four. They put up 91 in the other one. In fact, the only game in the last four that they did not have a 90-plus point performance was an 82-54 loss to South Carolina, but that loss, like you can see, it clearly sparked something in the doors because they blew the doors off of Texas A&M 91-58. They went to Missouri and won 100-59. They also had a couple of ranked wins earlier in the year. This is kind of one of those spots that I would go, yeah, last year's South Carolina team, I'm probably not as concerned of the winner of Tennessee Vandy, but this is conference tournament basketball. And for me as a basketball fan, like the teams I'm looking at putting into Final Fours are the teams that are hitting the accelerator right now, and both of these teams are doing that.
100%, and they're both well-coached. Speaking of UConn, Shea Ralph, the Vanderbilt coach, was Geno's assistant for, I think, 10 years, I believe. But regardless, this Vanderbilt team is really coming into its own. Like, a lot of people say, I know it's cheesy, but, like, it doesn't really matter how you play in November. It kind of matters how you're playing in March. I mean, obviously it does. But to a degree, I just think Vanderbilt's continuing to play its best basketball right now. And last time these two teams met, Michaela Blake scored a buzzer beater when Tennessee did not box out on a missed game-winning attempt. And I think it was like 0.3 seconds left or something crazy like that. Obviously, two in-state teams, rivalry, everything like that. I want to say that if Vanderbilt does win, it'll be the first time in program history that Vanderbilt has beat Tennessee twice in one season. So there's a lot on the line emotionally. There's obviously going to be really, like we're saying, high-level offense. So it's not a walk in the park of no matter, you know, who South Carolina gets tomorrow.
Which one would you rather play if you're Dawn Staley?
I think Vanderbilt. I do. I just think that Dawn, knock on, you know, if she's hearing this, she's probably knocking on wood, but, you know, because she's totally listening to me right now. But I just think that South Carolina has done an incredible job shutting down, like, one key star. They did it with Arkansas's Izzy Higginbottom. Honestly, they did it twice against Madison Booker. I know people will disagree with me to some extent on the second game, but Georgia Amor, there's just, like, a good track record of not letting stars who produce, you know, 30 points a game do that. So I do think that the Tennessee team is just a little bit more well-balanced and plays a very physical, you know, tiring game. I think if Tennessee wins in South Carolina still beats Tennessee tomorrow, has, like, you know, no issue getting away, they're going to be a lot more tired on Saturday than they would if they played Vanderbilt just based on the pace of play.
That is an interesting angle because of the teams that have moved on to round two, Georgia, Oklahoma is the 5 seed. Mississippi State knocks off Mizzou yesterday, 75-55. High scoring game there. They take on Ole Miss today. Florida gets by Auburn 60-50. They got Alabama. That's a quick team today. There's a lot of teams that can put up points, but the two teams, either one of which could become the Gamecocks opponents tomorrow, I would argue, at least right now, are both playing the highest efficiency and highest pace offense. So it's not even that I'm going to sit here and go, oh, Tennessee could get them, Vandy could get them. Certainly could. But for me, it's more like, yeah, they're going to get into a track meet, and then they have probably the 4 seed Kentucky the next day, and that might be one of those teams that can go down low and bang with Chloe Kitts and kind of push the Gamecocks off the boards, which you have pointed out on the show all year long has kind of been a consistent bugaboo for this team.
Yeah, and honestly, I've been watching a lot of old South Carolina footage, and it is, you do start to notice, like, at first all of us were in agreement that, like, okay, South Carolina is able to win games without Ashlyn Watkins, but I think when they're playing these physical games and then you watch just every missed shot, it was in the hands of Watkins or Cardoso last year. And especially in tournament play, that stuff comes down to know a win or loss potentially. So I do think that South Carolina is going to have a physical test no matter who they play in terms of height. So when you play a team like Tennessee, who presses, who subs so frequently with their guards, that's just added pressure because guards aren't able to necessarily, you know, help off and double team. There's just a lot of layers there. So there's a lot of basketball. Obviously, I don't think Dawn's guaranteeing that they're going to win no matter who they play tomorrow. So she isn't going to sit here and say, like, oh, we have to kind of rest or think about Saturday. Like, that's never going to be her MO. Just looking at it from that perspective, a lot of games in 3 days, you want to go as far as you can. If South Carolina is looking to win, I imagine that potentially Vanderbilt's just a little bit slower in terms of pace, but definitely still a team that can put up a lot of points.
Lulu Kessin from the Greenville News joining us here on the Rob Brown Show on the Fan Upstate in studio today. It is our honor and privilege to have her here. If we're looking at this bracket, honestly, I think my answer probably is Kentucky, but the finals matchup, if the Gamecocks make it there, Texas down there, LSU, both of those teams have given South Carolina either a flat-out L or real good games. We know that LSU-South Carolina rivalry has gotten heated the last couple of years. If South Carolina got to handpick their opponent, assuming they get by the winner of Tennessee-Vandy, assuming they get by Kentucky, do they want Texas? Do they want LSU? Or are they maybe kind of hoping that somebody else in the bottom half of that bracket pulls an upset?
I think that if South Carolina is thinking about their tournament future, because let's be realistic, all three teams are making the NCAA tournament. LSU, Texas, South Carolina do not need to win. That said, I do think that South Carolina, if they get Texas and beat Texas, that it's a huge gamble because Texas is the number one team in the country right now, and a lot of people forget that South Carolina beat them by 17 the first time they played because they're so just kind of stuck on the 4-point loss from early February. So I think if you're South Carolina, you trust your coaching, you trust your team, you want to play Texas, beat the number one team in the SEC tournament, get that 2-1 series advantage, because then that's going to help them for the incredibly high level of out-of-conference competition they're going to get. LSU is banged up. I just don't think in the committee's eyes a championship win over an LSU without Flaje Johnson is going to hold as much weight as a SEC tournament championship win over Texas, Madison Booker, Vic Schaefer. But again, that's, you know, a loss could put them right back down to being a 2 seed in the tournament. So it's a gamble either way, but I'm maybe going South Carolina wants to try again with Texas.
Right now, my assumption, and I've been working under this assumption, and obviously it very well may change based on the results of the SEC Women's Tournament, Big 12 Women's Tournament, etc. My assumption right now is that Texas will be the number one overall seed, UCLA probably the number 2 seed, and then, depending on South Carolina not flaming out in this tournament, it'll be a race between them and USC to get the number 3 overall seed. The good news in the women's tournament is that South Carolina, as long as they have a 1 next to that name, will host their region, which is a massive advantage the men don't have. But I still think, for the sake of hosting that regional and being able to kind of geographically, with an incredible fan base, not have them traveling out to California to go play games, the importance is not in winning the conference. The important is making sure you get, at the worst, that number 3-1 seed.
Right. Yeah, at one point, I think it was after the UConn loss, they were the 2 seed in Spokane. Like, I can't imagine a worse place for South Carolina fans. I mean, like, a lot of people, obviously, Birmingham is drivable. Like, South Carolina has one of the biggest fan bases right now. And so, kind of like you're saying, it's totally to its advantage if it's able to secure a spot in a drivable distance, considering how many fans travel for their games.
Yeah, without a doubt. This is a massive opportunity. So, Lulu Kessin, because we're going hot takes all the time. South Carolina winning this SEC tournament or not?
Yes.
I like that. Statement. Period. Exclamation point. Yes.
What were you expecting?
You know, I thought Lulu was going to be like, hey, listen, real good Texas team, real good LSU team. Mulkey, Dawn Staley would have vibe. Like, maybe, you never know. She just went with the flat out capital Y, bold, italicize, and underline it. Yes. What is it? Why?
I literally set myself up for like other team fans accounts to like clip this and clown me. But
welcome to radio, baby.
Literally. LSU's banged up right now. Do I think that they, you know, they can win without Flaje Johnson? I just think she's an instrumental part to the team. It's weird. I don't want to be the voice that kind of says this because I haven't heard her say it, but a lot of people are like, Kim Mulkey doesn't care about the SEC tournament. She's been public about that, and I haven't necessarily been around her saying that just because I'm new, so I don't want to necessarily be like, I'm not suggesting she's going to, you know, throw in the towel and not care. But I just think that even given the history with LSU, and I think LSU and Texas have some bad, like not bad blood, but they had a pretty close game way more recently than South Carolina LSU did in January. So I think whatever happened with LSU and South Carolina is in the past, where that's going to be a great game regardless. But I don't necessarily think, especially without Flaje playing. Texas, on the other hand, I think, yes, they've been so dominant and they've been done incredibly well against SEC teams, but the SEC tournament is like no other. It's the hardest one in, you know, recent years, I would argue. And so I just think that South Carolina is going to have the mental experience of the SEC tournament in their favor if it comes down to those two teams.
I think a lot of schools don't, and I think this is true on the men's side too. I think it's one of those things where it's like, hey, if we win the tournament, great. But at the end of the day, let's use it as a tool, as a resource to get us into the best spot in the national tournament. There's a couple of exceptions. Texas being able to come in and win the SEC in year one, I think, though, that banner would mean a lot to them. We will see how it plays out. The SEC Women's Tournament continues today, 11 a.m. Tennessee and Vanderbilt will tip. The winner of that game will square off noon tomorrow against the Gamecocks of South Carolina. Lulu Kesson from the Greenville News joining us in studio to break down a little women's hoops. You are the best. Thank you for coming out of your way to do this. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much. I'll shout out my parents and probably my boyfriend's grandma, who also watches this, and my grandparents and everybody. They're also great. So thank you.
Mama Lulu tagged me on the Instagram one day when you were on there. I was like, bang, she's my publicist now. Thanks, Mama Lulu Kesson.
I love that. Yeah, good for her. She's silly like that.
We will talk to you next week, and we may very well be on the verge of knowing some seeds in the big tournament at that point. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. Great to be here.
Lulu Kesson, when we come back, Rashad Beard, the host of the Panther Nation podcast, joins us. We'll see if there's maybe any teams that put up players for trades, cut guys yesterday. Any of them might end up in Charlotte. We'll ask Rashad when we come back on the Rob Brown Show on the Fan Upstate. The Rob Brown Show back on your radio. It's the Fan Upstate. Thank you again to Lulu Kesson from the Greenville News, popping by to talk SEC women's college basketball with us on the show. Very much enjoyed that conversation. Now we take it up to somebody who's almost as good looking as Lulu Kesson. The lovely Rashad Beard, host of the Panther Nation podcast, joins us every Thursday at 8:40 to talk a little Big Cat football. What's up, fella?
Did you just call me lovely?
You're a lovely person, Rashad.
He did call you lovely.
Listen, I got called.
It's a little awkward.
I got
really
called
is.
A cracker in the chat. I'm going to make it as weird as I can for the next 24 minutes, pal.
Fair enough. Okay, I'll take it.
Oh, I'm busy writing up the cracker liners right now.
They're on the way. All right, Rashad Beard, let's dive right in, bud, because we're at a point now where it's not just Panther news and info that we're following. You guys got to be looking league-wide because we're just a couple of days away from free agent negotiations opening up. We got a bunch of players out there on the trade block, a bunch that are getting cut, et cetera, et cetera. We know Joey Bosa's out of Los Angeles. We know that Tyler Lockett got cut, DK Metcalf requesting a trade. Any of those guys that you think the Cats are in the mix for, or is there anybody else that maybe you guys are waiting on to find out if they will be available either cut before free agency period or on the block when we get there? Kind of where's your head at in terms of eyeballs on players around the league that could be Carolina Panthers next year?
Yeah, this is such a tough, weird time of the year because everybody that gets cut or released, you want them, right? You want them on your team. Joey Bosa getting released was a shocker. And I mean, we are in need of a pass rusher. I know last year was not the best year for him. I think he had his lowest single season pass rush win rate last year. So maybe a change of scenery would do well for him. But that was very intriguing. I mean, you gotta at least be in on the deal to kind of see where it is with him. So I don't know, man. You gotta at least pick up the phone and call and see what the vibes
you've made.
Are,
you you've know? Made Lonzo the what? Happiest producer on earth.
Hey, listen. Also co-host, I am executive producer, by the way. Rashad and I are always vibing. Mm-hmm, so, I mean, it's no surprise that you were wrong and I was right. Mm-hmm, that's all I'm saying.
That's it.
Yeah, you got to pick up the phone. You at least got to pick up the phone and see what the vibes are.
I'm not disagreeing with that. I think it's worth a phone call. But here's the other problem you bump into. Max Crosby got his new deal yesterday. He is now the highest paid non-quarterback in the NFL, which effectively, we've been talking about, was Brock Purdy going to reset the quarterback market? Yeah, we got a market reset. It's defensive end, and while Joey Bosa's missed a lot of games the last 2 or 3 years, that's still going to drag everybody on that sliding scale up. To me, Rashad Beard, and I don't know if you'll go the same way with the Panthers or just the NFL philosophy in general, all of a sudden, drafting edge rushers has just become the value, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly a way to look at it as well. You have to look at the balance of your cap and where you're spending the money, right? It's really easy to do when you have a quarterback on a rookie deal. That's why that Super Bowl window is so important because, you know, when it's Bryce Young's time, the bulk of the money is going to go in that direction. So when you have the opportunity to potentially land a big-time position like a defensive end in the draft, you got to do it. So if you can get an edge rusher, so be it. I mean, I'm here for it. But at the same time, I do think Bosa is a bit of a long shot. You're paying Clowney. You're already paying some guys. You paid Wanham a little bit, albeit not the same. There's not massive money, but there is money involved in those positions. So I do think Bosa is a bit of a stretch, but you at least got to try. You never know. And we've seen guys picked up for nothing, and you're like shocked as to why, hey, we couldn't do it. You know what I mean? So you at least got to try. But the other two names you did mention were very interesting in Tyler Lockett and DK. Obviously, you know, we have a connection to that organization. Dan Morgan and Dave Canales came from that Seattle tree. And, you know, Canales was a wide receiver coach at some point in that system. And so you got to wonder if DK Metcalf could be a call they make, right? And they've got to pick up the phone, talk to Seattle. When those relationships when you have a relationship with Snyder and those guys over there, and Dan Morgan knows it makes the conversations a lot easier. And so those connections are important. So I'm not saying that we're going to go out and get DK, but I that's one I would definitely pick up the phone on and say, DK, what's it going to take? Now, the only thing about DK Metcalf is he's on the final year of his rookie of his contract, not his rookie deal, but you got to pay him after that. And so that's very, very important. You know, you're looking in the range of 25, 30 million potentially per year. So that's something you got to consider as well. That's why also wide receiver is a premium position. If you could draft it well, then you don't have to worry about paying those guys. But very interesting names out on the market.
I agree with that, but I would also point out you draft it well, you're set for a long time. It's real hard to draft wide receiver well, man. Like, it's real hard. It might be it and probably corner, I think, are probably the two positions that are the most difficult to get right via the draft, which is why I like going vets. I'm also kind of – I love DK Metcalf for you guys. I think he'd absolutely be a dog on the outside. Lockett might be the play for two reasons. Number one, you mentioned the connection. He was coached by Dave Canales, which is obviously the big thing. He was there with Dan Morgan, which is the big thing. Production level came down the last couple of years, and I heard somebody on one of the national shows last night, oh, DK, you know, Tyler Lockett coming off the least productive year since 2017. And that's true, but I would also point out it came 2 years after Dave Canales left that system and went down to Tampa Bay. There's a lot of question marks there. It was also the least productive year of, well, I won't say least productive year of Geno Smith's career, but certainly a down year from the year he had under Canales before he took off. I think Lockett's in play here, not because he's bad, because he's not Rashad, but I think a lot of people don't see an instability in Seattle that I see right now. I still think that guy's got number one potential. It's probably not a long term, probably like 2-3 more years out of the deal. But for the growth of Bryce Young, that might be the right play.
So what you're saying is you want to turn our wide receiver group into the AARP club. Because Lockett is getting up there, and we've already got Thielen. So I think Lockett is a bit of a stretch. I mean, it makes sense, right? Your points are valid. You know, I think that, you know, the connection is there. Canales coached him, but I don't think we're going to add more age to this, to the wide receiver core. I think it's going to get younger, if anything, especially when you have a guy like Thielen on the roster. You've already got somebody to coach. We don't need a bunch of coaches. We need some dogs. And so let's go out there and get some, whether it's via free agency or the draft, we do have to get better and improve in that area. I just don't think Lockett is the guy I'm going to get.
What if I gave him to you on a 1-year deal? 1 year, 14 mil.
I'm good.
Okay. All right. All right. Rashad Beard, host of the Panther Nation podcast, joining us here on the Rob Brown Show and the Fan Upstate, does so every Thursday at 8 a.m. All right. So we've talked about some of the guys that are available right now, either trade or cut. Has there been any rumors in the wind, any smoke on the horizon that Carolina's got anything else cooking behind the scenes before we get to free agent negotiation here in about 6 days?
Yeah, word on the street is that, you know, Javon Holland, former safety from Miami, is a guy that we're looking at. Obviously, we have only Damani Richardson signed as a safety, and he had a solid year, you know, being an undrafted guy, but I don't think we want to roll out the season with him being our starter. I think he's got a couple more development years to go before he becomes really becomes what he's can be. So I think Javon Holland is a guy very solid in Miami. I think between us and the Titans, that's the word on the street, is that it's between us and the Titans. I think he's going to get a solid deal. And I do think that that's probably going to be the most likely, probably first signing for the Carolina Panthers and once free agency starts. So I think, again, safety is a huge position to need. You let guys like Xavier Woods walk. You let guys like, Fuller, all these guys that we signed last year, they're out of here. Jordan Fuller, Nick Scott, Sam Franklin, all those guys could potentially be up out of here. So we got to get a safety bat. So the word on the street, Javon Holland is going to be the guy in play for us. I have not heard of any other rumors at this time, but I think that's the biggest one.
Could I talk you into making a play for Darius?
I think that's interesting. Slay being released. I mean, he's talented. I think that, I don't know, man. You could talk me into it for sure. Slay's talented, bro. So he's very, very good cornerback. I can see that happening. I can certainly see that happening. I like Slay a lot. I just don't know. I don't know if we're going to go younger, the cornerback. You got JC. You're going to sign JC to an extension. So I don't know if you're going to pay two cornerbacks.
Is that a guarantee?
I don't know.
Is that a guarantee JC Horn gets his up?
That's certainly locked in, bro. I don't see by any stretch of the mind we let, you know, him play on that fifth-year option. He's definitely going to get extended for sure.
100%. I don't disagree.
And I expect it to happen like very, very soon.
I agree. I honestly wouldn't be sure. I'll be more shocked if it's not done before the season starts up than if it is.
Yeah. I for sure. I think it's going to be a good deal. I think it's going to be a very solid deal. JC needs to get locked in for sure. I think he's going to be very, very good for us in the long term.
Rashad Beard joining us here on the Rob Brown Show on the Fan Upstate, talking to little Carolina Panther offseason football. Didn't get a chance yet to talk to you, Shad, as the NFL Draft Combine took place up in Indianapolis, Indiana, through this past weekend. You guys go live. You do full combine breakdowns of any and everybody that could end up on the roster all the way through round 7. So give me a couple of guys that jumped off the page at you.
So obviously the biggest one is going to be Shamar Stewart out of Texas A&M, edge rusher. We just talked about potentially drafting one. That's a guy, 1,000%. He's a little bit raw, but very good run defender. Doesn't have the sack production you would like to see coming out of college, but I think he's very talented, can be coached up, and I think he'd be very, very, very solid. Another guy, Nick Emanwari out of South Carolina. He had the greatest combine that you could ever have. I mean, I don't think you could draw up a better combine than he had. He went out there and knocked it completely out the park. Very, very good across the board. So I think he earned himself some money, 1,000%.
That dude bumped up about 15 picks with his combine, for real.
Yeah, he did. And I think he kind of – I was looking at him in the second. I certainly think he worked his way into the first off of that combine performance. And I know it's the Underwear Olympics, but – money can be made in the combine, and Nick Emanwari is one of those guys that proves that, is going to prove that, because he worked his way up into the first round for sure off that performance, 1,000%. Couple other guys, Jared Wilson, center out of Georgia, very good combine for him. A couple of guys we didn't get a chance to see, like Jalen Walker. I know he's dealing with the injury. I know we talked about him potentially last show. We talked about him potentially being the pick. Did not get a chance to see him. He's going to wait till the pro day, and I don't know if we're going to get a chance to see him at all because he's nursing that injury. So running back Bashaw Tootin, I think he is somebody that you can keep an eye on. He's a former North Carolina Anti-Aggie. Shout out to my alma mater. He also transferred to Virginia Tech, played. He had a really good performance for the running backs. Darian Porter, a cornerback, had a good performance. There were some good performances. One thing about the combine is that I hate to see is that guys get invited and they don't necessarily participate. That definitely takes a position away from somebody that could show up and show out there. So I hate that. Hate to see that, but very good performances out there, man. I like a lot of things I saw in the combine.
All right, let me give you two names real quick. Get your thoughts on both of them before we run to a break. Rashad Beard. We've talked about this a bunch on the show. Obviously, the two names that Panther fans here in the Upstate keep throwing at us are the tight end out of Penn State, Tyler Warren. We pointed out earlier, your boy's got Jatavion still on that roster. He got banged up last year, but he was growing. You could see the upward trajectory before that injury, but Tyler Warren's kind of a big physical stud. And then the name that got thrown at me last night, and I kind of had to scratch the chin a little bit because I don't think it's the right pick. But then also, I'm like, I kind of think he would fit right into the Dave Canales offense, and that's the running back out of Boise State, Ashton Janty, who, from what I can tell, is going to be flirting inside that top 10 right around where you guys are picking at number 8.
Yeah, he is flirting, but I'm going to have to reject him because if we take that running back at 8, given all the needs that we have, I think Panther Nation will riot. I don't think that's definitely – I mean, I like Janty as a player. I think he's going to be a good fit somewhere, just not with the Carolina Panthers. I like him. I think he's got really good tape, very good player. I just don't think he's the guy for Carolina at this time. We have bigger needs on the defensive side of football, and I just don't think running back is it. Tyler Warren, I like a lot. I do think Tyler Warren is going to go probably top 15 for sure. You know, Canales had a really good quote about Warren, so I think that's kind of where the buzz came from for Tyler Warren with the Panthers. I can see it because we are lacking that tight end depth, and we're letting Tommy Tremble test the market. So I do think there's an opening for Tyler Warren. I just don't know that, again, given all the needs that we have, I just don't think he's going to be the pick. Just my personal pick. I wouldn't be mad at Warren, though, be honest with you. I would not be mad at Warren. I would be more mad at Genty.
That's fair. That was going to be my question. Is it more of a we're missing out on bigger needs? I mean, if you get to 8 – and Tyler Warren, who I do think is clearly one of the best, I would say probably 6 players in this draft overall. If he's 8, that to me feels like a BPA pick. But you guys have enough needs that the folks who are draft needs over skills guys, I think, have a good argument this year. Tyler Warren is a guy that you can line up at tight end, but you can put him in the wing. You can put him in the slot. You can, hell, if you need him, you can put him up in a fullback. He's that physical. To me, I'm almost drafting him like a almost like a Taysom Hill without the quarterbacking ability. I think he can be that kind of athlete. Does that add to value to make him an 8 pick?
It certainly does. When you look at Canales, he's done well with tight ends too. So I know that if he were brought here and we were able to draft him, I think he would do an excellent job. I just don't know. I just can't see us passing up on a guy. I don't know. I just can't see us passing on like a DT or an edge. I just can't see it. I just cannot see it, given all the issues that we have on defense. But I wouldn't be mad. I would not be mad at Warren at all. I wouldn't be mad. And I think we have enough issues that you can darn near make any position best player available, and it would make sense. That's just the way our roster is configured. So I wouldn't be mad at Warren at all.
Rashad Beard, host of the Panther Nation podcast, joins us every Thursday at 8:40 to talk Carolina Panther football next week. Looking forward to it because next week, we talk rounds 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7, which is where the meat and potatoes are. Rashad, appreciate you, big dog. We'll talk to you soon, brother. Thank you as always.
Absolutely. Appreciate you guys.
Our pleasure. The legendary Rashad Beard. Follow the Panther Nation podcast on X at Panther Nation PC. More importantly, get subscribed, liked up, turn the notifications on YouTube because the boys are going to be going live a lot. When we come back, Hayton Ass Mario from the BetMGM Network joins us. We'll talk about all the moves that got made around the NFL yesterday. Before that, Lonzo reads a sports flash here on the Crack a Sports Show.
All cracker, all the time. Clemson basketball program is one step closer to a top 10 ranking with a 78-69 win over Boston College last night. Tigers were led by Jaden Zachary's 21 points, Chase Hunter's 18, and Ian Shefflin's 13 and 8 boards. Clemson out-rebounded the Eagles 43-26 in a win. The Tigers will wrap the regular season Saturday at home against Virginia Tech. Alabama is on a two-game losing streak after dropping a 99-94 game against Florida last night. Gators' Alex Condon had 27 and 10 boards, and Walter Clayton Jr. added 22 and 8 assists. In the win, Florida moves to 26-4. Tune in Saturday at 8 p.m. as Furman Paladins take on the Samford Bulldogs in the first round of the SoCon basketball tournament. It's Furman versus Samford right here on your home for Furman Paladins basketball. It's us. It's the Fan. Upstate.